KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. EATS is hiring a behavioral health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They are also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for False Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. Community announcements. There will be a regular meeting of the school board on Tuesday, March 25th at 6 p.m. at the Borough Building here in Sandpoint. You can also tune into that live here on KSDP. And today is March 20th, 2025. Happy birthday to Travis Kenyon and happy birthday to Peyton Kazakin. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening, and have a great day. It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, today, north winds 20 knots, sea 6 feet. Tonight, north winds 20 knots, sea 6 feet. And Friday, north winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, today, north winds 20 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 20 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, small craft advisory today. Today, north winds 20 knots, seas 9 feet. Tonight, north winds 20 knots in the evening, becoming variable 10, seas at 7 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, becoming northeast 20 in the afternoon, seas 5 feet. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, today north winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 5 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 4 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, today north winds 20 knots, seas 6 feet. Tonight, north winds 15 knots, seas 6 feet. And Friday, northeast winds 15 knots, seas 5 feet. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, mostly cloudy. Scattered snow showers in the morning, then a slight chance of snow in the afternoon. Highs in the 30s, north winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. A slight chance of snow. Lows in the mid-20s to lower 30s, north winds 15 miles an hour. And Friday, partly sunny with a slight chance of snow. Highs in the mid-20s to lower 30s, northeast winds 15 miles an hour. Your tide predictions for the Pop-Off Island. There was a high tide at 5:47 a.m. at 6 feet, 9 inches. A low tide at 1:11 p.m. at 1 foot. A high tide at 7:50 p.m. at 4 feet, 4 inches, and a low tonight at 11:50 at 3 feet, 6 inches. Your sun rose at 8:42 this morning, and your sun will set at 8:56, giving us 12 hours and 14 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, Chignik Bay is plugged into high-speed internet, and Silver Bay is taking over OBI's Alaskan facilities. Stay tuned.
ALIU is proud to sponsor the stories and voices that connect our community. ALIU is committed to building a stronger future for our region. To learn more about ALIUT's commitment for a stronger future, visit alucorp.com.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. It's Thursday, March 20th, 2025. Today is the first day of spring, but you might not know it from looking around on Alaska. We've got snow today, and a lot of it. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk, with some local news from on Alaska. Chignik Bay, a fishing community on the Alaska Peninsula, now has access to high-speed internet through a fiber optic project that stretches across the Aleutian chain. The community of less than 100 permanent residents is the latest to come online in GCI's regional fiber project. In a press release, GCI executive Jennifer Nelson said high-speed internet can expand access to work, healthcare, education, and entertainment in rural Alaska. Chignik Bay is the sixth of 13 communities expected to come online with the fiber project. So far, Accutan, King Cove, Larson Bay, Sandpoint, and Unalaska are plugged in. Network testing is expected to take place soon in Port Lyons and Uzinki. GCI finished laying down 800 miles of subsea cable along the Aleutian chain in 2022. The 2.5 gig internet speeds offered through the project are the fastest available from the Alaska-based telecommunications company. Planning started in 2017 for the first phase of the Aleutians Fiber Project. It's a $100 million project partially funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture Rural Development's ReConnect program. Unalaska was the first community to come online at the end of 2022. Silver Bay Seafoods announced in a press release Tuesday that it will take over all Alaskan facilities owned by competitor OBI Seafoods. That's through a partnership with the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, one of six economic development groups in western Alaska. The deal means Silver Bay will control plants in Petersburg, Seward, Larson Bay, Egigik, Wood River, Cordova, Kodiak, and Naknek. The facilities process salmon, whitefish, and crab in fresh, frozen, and canned forms. Silver Bay, a fisherman-owned processor, already runs 13 seafood processing facilities across Alaska and the West Coast. The company has been expanding and acquired five processing plants last year. Most recently, that included longtime Alaska processor Peter Pan Seafood's facilities in Dillingham and Port Mueller. In a press release, Silver Bay's CEO Cora Campbell said the deal will expand the company's reach and strengthen the industry. BBEDC's chief executive CEO Michael Link says the partnership is about stability, particularly with what he describes as, quote, the many challenges facing Alaska's seafood industry. Senator Lisa Murkowski says President Trump is testing the limits of his power. In a speech to the legislature Tuesday, Alaska's senior Republican senator said the president has gone too far during his first 2 months back in office. Trump has frozen funding that Congress approved. He's moved to shutter agencies created by law. He's fired thousands of federal workers across dozens of agencies. Murkowski says she's disturbed by the cuts to the federal workforce.
These terminations are indiscriminate, and many, we're now learning, are unlawful. And they're being made regardless of performance and with little understanding of the function and the value of each position.
Federal courts have reversed some of Trump's moves, though it's not always clear how faithfully the administration abides by these orders. Just this weekend, Trump administration officials refused to stop a flight deporting alleged members of a Venezuelan gang without an opportunity to present their case to a court. Trump officials argue the judge's order came too late, though flight records reviewed by news organizations indicate that's not true. Murkowski told state lawmakers that legislators have a duty to assert their and the court's authority under the Constitution. And she said there are plenty of reasons to deport gang members, but she says the government still has to give the accused due process.
So we got to stand up, and we have to make sure that it is understood that we are all separate but equal branches of government. When the court's orders are defied, that weakens our courts. When the people no longer believe that the system of justice is there for them, what do we have in this country?
Some commentators have described the administration's apparent defiance of a federal court order as a constitutional crisis. Murkowski says that's not how she sees it, at least not yet. But she's worried her Republican colleagues in Congress, who lead both the House and Senate, might not stand up even if Trump openly and clearly ignores a court order. Here she is responding to a question from a conservative legislator asking whether there's any chance that Congress might trim back Trump's executive authority.
Is it possible for the legislative branch to act on this? Yes. Do I see that happening with the current construct? No.
She says she's been criticized harshly for standing up to the president, who has vowed retribution against his enemies. And she says that's why others are staying silent. Tune in tomorrow at noon and 5 right here at KUCB for a new episode of the Bering Sea Barometer. Join your host, Captain Pete Dayton, for a taste of the real-life experiences of fishing the Bering Sea. Be sure to check out our other new series, too. It's called Amplifying the Aleutians. We interview longtime Channel 8 TV and KUCB alums for a glimpse into the history of the station and, by extension, Unalaska itself. Find all episodes of both shows on our website and on Spotify. Here's a look at what's happening in Unalaska this week. Cookbook Club meets tonight in the library at 5:30. This month's selection is Rice, a Savor of the South cookbook by Michael W. Twitty. Stop by to share food and discuss recipes. All are welcome, and extra copies of the book are available now for checkout at the library. Tomorrow there will be a stuffed animal sleepover at the Unalaska Public Library. Children in preschool and up with a parent are invited to bring a favorite stuffed animal friend to the library for an evening story time with milk and cookies. The stuffed animals will stay overnight at the library for their very own sleepover while you go home, and you can come back and pick them up the next day. The sleepover is for stuffed animals only. No kids will sleep at the library. The Museum of the Aleutians is calling all Ununga artists to submit their art for an upcoming exhibit this spring. The deadline is this Saturday. Artists are invited to enter up to 3 pieces, and they should arrive at the Museum of the Aleutians by Saturday. They'll be returned to the artists. Pieces can be traditional or modern, but must be made by Ununga artists. For questions, please contact Collections Manager Joselle Hale. The Museum of the Aleutians is also hosting a Lunch and Learn featuring KUCB General Manager Lauren Adams Saturday in the library at 12:30. Lauren will be talking about the history of KUCB as we celebrate our 50th anniversary. A community open mic takes place Saturday night at the Burma Road Chapel starting at 5. Whether you're a seasoned performer or taking the stage for the first time, you're welcome to share your talent in a supportive and inclusive environment. Coffee and light refreshments are available, and all ages are welcome. Finally, the Unalaska Book Club meets in the library Sunday afternoon at 4. This month's book is Diamond Eye by Kate Quinn. That's the news from Unalaska. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk. For more local coverage and community events, check out our website at kucb.org. Stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Do something you love today.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Limits on Alaska's commercial fisheries were established in the early 1970s to ensure the industry could sustain itself. But researchers and Sea Alaska shareholders say that's backfired in rural Alaska Native villages where many family-run boats have raised their hooks and nets for good. As KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, they're calling for change.
A half century ago, Angoon's Harbor was packed with small, family-operated boats that caught fish on hook and line, called trolling, or with a big net called a purse seine. Salmon and halibut fed mouths and bank accounts. Peter Duncan, mayor of Angoon, remembers those days. But it's not the same anymore. He says that fisheries regulations have caused
devastating changes. You just don't find a troller in our harbors anymore.
He says that's made people more dependent on government help, like food stamps. Duncan grew up fishing on his father's seiner in the small Tlingit village on Admiralty Island. He graduated to his own troll boat and commercially fished until the early 1990s, when he says he couldn't make a living that way anymore. Folks weren't catching enough salmon to make money, so permits became more valuable to sell. Many of those permits left the island, and with them went the means for the village to sustain itself.
It's sad to know that at one time, we used to be, you know, a strong fishing fleet that took pride in going up and going fishing.
Duncan's story isn't unique. This reality has unfolded in most rural villages throughout the Gulf of Alaska, as first reported by the Northern Journal. In part, it's an unintended consequence of a law that took effect in 1975 called the Limited Entry Act, which allowed the state to issue a set number of permits for each fishery. The goal was to address a sustainability problem. At the time, salmon populations were plummeting while commercial fishermen multiplied. The idea was simple: cap the number of people fishing, and there will be enough to go around. But that's not what happened in Native villages. Courtney Carruthers, an environmental anthropologist at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, led a study of more than 3,000 Sea Alaska shareholders and descendants about the community impacts of fisheries limitation policies. She found that Sea Alaska villages owned half as many fishing vessels in 2019 than they owned in 1978, and commercial salmon permits had dwindled by more than a third since 1975.
This is not good public policy if our communities in the Gulf of Alaska, surrounded by the ocean with, you know, thousands of years of fishing knowledge and history, within one generation are cut out. I mean, this is an absolute crisis.
Joe Nelson is interim president of the Sea Alaska Corporation, representing Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian interests in Southeast Alaska. His airy corner office in downtown Juneau looks out over Gastineau Channel. Clouds trundle into the snowy peaks of Douglas Island. Glossy magazine copies of Carruthers' study are spread out on a table. The report points to a loss of fishing access as one of the main reasons people leave their rural villages.
That's all been going one way, and that's migration out of most of the fleet and most of the permits.
That out-migration, he says, leads to schools and other services closing down. Those who stay behind are aging out of the industry without enough young people to pick it up, he says.
So the whole economy just shrinks. It's much bigger than a single fisherman that decides not to show up anymore.
Nelson says that the state needs to tweak the limited entry system so that Native communities can fish commercially without going bankrupt. When limited entry started, the price to fish for salmon skyrocketed from hundreds of dollars to thousands.
So today, a seine permit in Southeast Alaska is worth about $140,000, and a drift permit is worth about $44,000.
Those numbers vary, depending on how well a fishery is doing. Johnson says that while the Limited Entry Act helped make Alaska's fisheries more sustainable, it created this new problem. Now, the commission is talking internally about potential solutions,
such as making it administratively easier to transfer a permit to another rural resident in the same area that you live in.
Researchers say there could be room for creating a new class of permit, such as an entry-level or small-scale permit, to get people started. But any changes would have to come through the state legislature. There's also a potential federal pathway for recognizing indigenous rights to fish, which were not compensated through the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Sea Alaska is not advocating for specific policy changes just yet. Nelson says there must be open public discussions that look at the slew of ideas. But first, he wants state officials to recognize that there is a problem. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Kodiak's herring fishery has been extended and broken into new seasons for sacro, food, and bait. That's after the Alaska Board of Fisheries approved changes to the fishery at its statewide shellfish meeting in Anchorage last week. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports the hope is to boost the fishery amidst tough market conditions.
Herring may now be commercially fished in the Kodiak area nearly year-round during the herring sacro season, which starts in April and now runs through February. The Alaska Board of Fisheries approved that change and modified Kodiak's food and bait fishery to be split into two seasons. Board member Jared Godfrey, who proposed the amended and final proposal, says the aim is to help give Kodiak herring fishermen a market back.
It's ultimately an outgrowth of the Herring and Revitalization Committee that we worked on to explore if there were actually viable markets that could be could make this fishery come back to life, because it's not a fishery that became obsolete. It was a market that went away.
The Herring Revitalization Committee was formed a year ago in response to the statewide issues plaguing herring fishermen, such as a depressed market for sacro. But it's unclear right now if the market opportunities for selling these fish will be available this time around. Longtime herring fisherman Bruce Shackler of Kodiak says he's hearing interest in Alaska herring products from other countries.
So anything of this development that happens in Kodiak that we're looking for, that we're hoping for, that we have great indication of, from Japan to Europe to Iceland.
Still, only a few vessels have participated in Kodiak's herring fishery in recent years, while the amount of fish has been at near record levels in that same time period. That's according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The new changes to the Kodiak herring fishery break down the sacro season into three distinct periods, which will not overlap with the timing of the separate food and bait fishery. A concern voiced by Sitka resident Paulette Moreno of the Tlingit Nation, who is an advocate in the Herring Protectors Advocacy Group, was about the timing of the process. She says that the board-generated proposal and decision was rushed.
I speak in this way because I feel as though a board-generated proposal does not necessarily give the public enough time and all parties involved to comment and to have their thoughts heard on something so important as a what some people would call resource, but our traditional customary food, not only in one area but in all areas.
But Schachtler of Kodiak says this fishery change is a product of the Herring Revitalization Committee's public meetings and work from last year. He put the original proposal forward to the Board of Fisheries during its meeting last month on behalf of the committee.
This proposal simply tries to do what the task force and everybody has asked them to do, is try to figure out a way to move the industry forward out of these doldrums, out of this disaster we're in the middle of. And this proposal does exactly that.
Both Shackler and Moreno agree this altered herring fishery in Kodiak is going to have an effect on other herring fisheries around the state. Not everyone who gave public testimony on this proposal agreed, though, and it's unclear if processors will buy the fish or not. The changes will go into effect once the legal wording is worked out and established by the Department of Law and could be potentially implemented for the upcoming Kodiak herring season, which is set to begin on April 1st. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game will put out a new advisory announcement with more information. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
A A federal district court judge has denied a claim made by two regional tribal consortiums in western Alaska that fisheries management in the Bering Sea violated environmental law. As reported by KYUK's Sage Smiley, U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason denied the claims made by the Association of Village Council Presidents and the Tanana Chiefs Conference in a judgment on March 11th. The Association of Village Council Presidents, the Regional Tribal Consortium for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, and the Tanana Chiefs Conference, the Regional Tribal Consortium for much of western interior Alaska, had sued the National Marine Fisheries Service, which manages fisheries in the federal waters outside of Alaska. Two fisheries trade organizations with ties to the pollock industry, the ATSI Processors Association and United Catcher Boats, joined in defense of federal fisheries managers. The tribal organizations, along with the city of Bethel, claimed that recent groundfish harvest management in the Bering Sea wasn't properly taking into account major changes to the ocean ecosystem, including fisheries collapses on the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers, and thus violated federal law. They argued that fisheries managers relied on outdated environmental impact assessments when setting management goals for the Bering Sea groundfish harvest. According to the judgment, between 2023 and 2025, federal fisheries managers relied on an environmental impact statement, or EIS, from 2007. That analysis laid out a strategy for determining annual harvest that allowed managers to consider new circumstances or information and decide whether those factors warranted new environmental analysis. But Judge Gleason found that the Fisheries Management Agency followed the proper legal steps to consider supplemental information. Gleason wrote that federal fisheries managers make decisions based on their expertise and that they did not miss procedural steps in determining whether or not to do an environmental impact assessment or to supplement a 2007 environmental impact assessment. It's not yet clear whether the plaintiffs in the case plan to appeal the decision.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Thank you. we're gonna rise up singing. You're gonna spread your wings, child, and take to the sky. Going to harm you now. Na 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 na. Don't you cry.
Tuesday's gone Cause he knows he ain't blind. Programming on KSDP is supported by the Shumigan Corporation. Located in Sand Point, the Shumigan family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sand Point Tavern, the Anchor Inn Motel, and the Anchor Inn Lounge. The Shumigan Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sand Point, on the web at www.shumigan.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Shumigan Corporation, hometown values and service, a proud sponsor of KSDP.
can all join in with. It's very simple and I hope it's new. Make your own steps up if you want to. Any old steps that you think will do.
You are listening to KSDP Radio, 8:30 a.m. Sandpoint, 880.1 FM, on translator K201DA, King Cove, Alaska.
with a little kiss like this.
She was fooling, 'cause she knew what she was doing when she taught me how to walk this way. She told me to.